listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas. Guys, it's another Wednesday. By the time people hear this, Thursday or Friday. But let's talk some wrestling. And let's start with our home promotion here in Atlanta, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, as they've announced that as part of their fifth season, which actually kicks off September 30th, starting in January, they're going to have the To Be The Man tournament, which is going to be a tournament of 16 men that is going to take place, who knows, maybe several weeks or months, not sure, in a World Cup style tournament where they'll be round robin part of that, and then in single elimination tournament. At least that's what is being advertised on the social media. So 16 men. And as the announcement was, they're going to have 16 of the best wrestlers in the world participate in this. Of course, coming off the G1, which we'll talk about in a little bit, because they just finished, I'm sure there are a lot of different comparisons. But here, you know, AWE likes to make their own spin on different things. And in this tournament, they're definitely going to, I'm sure, take their own spin. But first off, your thoughts here on the To Be The Man tournament.
Well, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, from everything that I was able to kind of gather is that it's essentially an AWE G1, basically. There's going to be block style, you know, block style fighting. I assume we, as far as the 16 competitors, will probably be a lot of the AWE, you know, mainstays, as well as people maybe returning to AWE, people making debuts. You know, I'm interested to see, you know, who the 16 are. And then, of course, if it is true block styling, then we will get, you know, quite a lot of matchups we may not really see or have seen otherwise, similar to like the G1. You know, you see a lot of matches within the G1 that you don't normally see within the course of a year in singles action. And I think it's a good thing too, because it can add a little bit more importance to some of, you know, what would typically be considered like a mid-card match. You know, now that, okay, so we have these two guys fight and there was additional, you know, you look at it and people go, oh, that's cool. You know, these two guys are fighting. Okay. But now that they're like fighting for point standing, and if this guy wins, then maybe he makes it further in the tournament, or, you know, or whatever. I mean, I don't know how far into it it gets. Are we going to be doing some kind of AWE New Japan math, you know, where two guys who have no, you know, chance of making the finals, one of their matches comes down to who makes the finals or not, you know, based on who wins. So I'm curious to see kind of where that goes, but I think it's a really big announcement. I think it's going to be add a lot of excitement. You know, yet again, I think for me, the biggest thing is who are the 16. We can probably tick off a few names just based on who some of the top guys in AWE are. You know, but do we see names coming back that we haven't seen in AWE in a while? You know, I mean, I think one of the big ones that a lot of fans wish we would be able to see more in AWE, but you know, his international bookings and scheduling kind of restricts that, is David Starr. You know, I mean, David Starr was a major player in AWE, you know, 2-3 years ago, and he came back and fought for the championship several times against several different competitors. You know, he always puts on great matches when he's at AWE, and you know, everywhere he goes, really. But does he make a return? Would his schedule allow him enough dates in season 5 to finish out his commitments for the tournament? I think that's one of the big things. That becomes the big difference with a tournament like this at an independent level versus at, you know, TNA did their Bound for Glory series, the G1, all those people were contracted to that company. You know, what happens if, say, 3 or 4 months into this tournament, you know, somebody gets injured, something happens, they can't commit? What happens if an international tour is scheduled and, you know, somebody's going to be out of the country for 3 months. Okay, well now, you know, they're going to miss two or three shows possibly. How does that affect the brackets? How does that affect their tournament standing? What about if somebody does happen to get signed? You know, I mean, we've had that happen before. People who've been in AWE, you know, major players in AWE end up getting signed and having to, you know, and leaving to go to Florida, go to NXT. You know, do they just get removed from the tournament? Is there somebody put back there in their place? You know, what exactly kind of, how does that affect it? I think that's the biggest thing is that I see with it that adds additional intrigue too. Just can people, you know, a tournament like this scale hasn't really been done on the independent scene yet. So I'm really excited to see how all it goes. And I'm thankful that we'll get all that action right here in Atlanta, and, you know, we'll be there live for it, you know, at ringside.
Yeah, I'm just stoked. One of the selling points for me is that you're going to see matches that you can only see at Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. And I think that's important because we've seen matches from some of our favorites just kind of all over the place. You know, tag teams will go north, they'll go, you know, places south. And, you know, the feuds will just kind of run from state to state, territory to territory, if you will. But this tournament is promising that there will be such unique matches that you're not going to see them anyplace else. And that's huge for independent wrestling, because that means that's opportunities out there for wrestlers to still a phrase here, to show up and show out. There is a point system, 2 points for a win, 0 for a draw, and -1 for a loss. So I think this is unique in itself, where most point systems, you know, your award points is either some points or 0 points, but to actually take away points is going to push the competitors to actually go harder than usual to win, because while it's great to pick up points, you definitely don't want to lose any momentum by taking a loss. So that right there, I think, is going to make just an addition to make everything just really, really unique for this tournament. So I'm excited.
So, okay, so we're looking at some of the best wrestlers in the world. So I just had to just, you know, kind of fantasy book my own. And I actually came out with 16 names that, you know, some are my favorites and some I think are truly some of the best in the world. So I'm going to name mine first, and I want to hear what names you guys could come up with if you could name 16 people. All right, so here are mine. In no specific order, David Starr, Cody Rhodes, Joey Janela, Fred Yehai, Walter, Ray Phoenix, Penta El Cero M, Austin Aries, Loki, Shane Strickland, JT Dunn, Timothy Thatcher, Ray Horace, Dragon Lee, Jeff Cobb, and Ethan Page. Now, I am in no way saying that AWE is going to get these 16 guys, or should get these 16 guys on the tournament. I mean, not that they could or could not. You know, I don't know what the plans are. But, hey, I'm just going here on a wish list. In a dream scenario, some of the best guys in the world, those are my picks. Of course, I excluded people that were contracted by WWE, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Ring of Honor, because, you know, that would make it a lot harder to get them on U.S. soil and work for an independent promotion. So, how about you guys? Do you guys have 16 names?
A lot of the names you mentioned, you know, are people who we've seen at AWE in the past. You know, I mean, we've seen, you know, I mean, some of them we haven't seen in quite some time. David Starr, JT Dunn, Shane Strickland, you know, are people that I would love to see back in Atlanta more frequently. People, I mean, heck, people I'd love to see in the South more frequently. They're, you know, those, I mean, JT is primarily in the Northeast these days. Strickland is kind of a little bit of everywhere, but he doesn't seem to float our way. As far as a solid 16 of non-contracted talent, let me see. I mean, I definitely would go with, I mean, quite a lot that are in your list would be in mine too. Fred Yehi, I definitely think is an amazing performer. JT Dunn, let's see. Yeah, JT, David Starr. I like your inclusion of Cody, but I think is he not under Ring of Honor contract?
I mean, technically, but he can call his own shot. Where he doesn't have an exclusive.
Yeah, he's not. He doesn't have to be at every single show and that kind of thing.
Right, like for example, the Young Bucks have the exclusive Ring of Honor and PWG in the United States.
Yes, that's true. Cody is kind of a little bit of a rarity. I mean, let's see. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I don't know if I'd put him in the, as, you know, I mean, I'm still trying to think AWE centric as opposed to just the best 16 in the country.
In the world, well, the post said best in the world.
Yeah, well, they said some of. They didn't say the best, and you know, only those people. They're not going to get Walter, okay? I hate to tell you. Walter's probably got an Evolve, you know, a WN, you know, lockdown right now as far as American places he can go.
Oh, absolutely. I just threw 60 names out there just for a sampling of some of the best in the world. I mean, look, those are 16 other people I consider best in the world, but you know what? 20 other people could have 20 different lists, you know? It's all about taste.
And that's it. And that's the biggest thing with professional wrestling. It's, you know, it's a performance art. It's entirely subjective, you know? A lot of people would think that, you know, guys in the WWE that, you know, they're, oh, this so-and-so is the best in the world. I mean, if that's what you, if you think he's the most entertaining to you, if you like watching his matches the most, then that's what the best. It's a performance art. It's not a legitimate sport. It's not like the UFC where the guy, in theory, the guy who has the belt is the best in that division. Okay, that's not always the case. Even in UFC, that's not necessarily the case because, you know, certain people don't get title shots because of politics, etc. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it's, for me to find 16 right now, it's definitely kind of tough. I mean, especially because I would be not only looking at men's competitors, I would be looking at women's competitors too. They didn't say anything specifically about it being exclusive to men only. You know, it's possible that, you know, we get, you know, one or two women in there, although AWE does have their Roar division, you know, that is only women. They don't exclude women necessarily from other competition. I mean, we saw, you know, we've seen women in the Shoddy Low Invitational Battle Royal, you know, in the Stunner Division matches and stuff. I'm sure, you know, we may see women as well, but I don't know. So, yeah, I think it's too hard for me to narrow down to 16.
Well, now the post, the name of the tournament is To Be the Man. So, I mean, yes. Not to say that a woman couldn't be a man, but not trying to be politically incorrect, however.
To be the man, you got to beat the man, but I think they're using, you know, the term the man to mean the top player, the best, as opposed to, you know, physically having male genitalia. You know, I mean, it's 2018 here, and it'll be 2019 when this tournament starts, okay? Who knows what would classify a man by that point, okay? it's a wild, wild world.
I could come up with 16, but your list is pretty spot on. I had Cody on my list. Dreams for me personally, I'd love to see Jimmy Havoc inside of an AWE ring. I mean, that would just, I'd die. I literally would die. Throw in Mark Haskins as well. Have, you know, a couple of the Progress gentlemen come over. PCO. I think PCO would be crazy to see in the Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment universe to watch him do his thing in front of the Fanatics and them just realize just how special and kind of crazy that he is out in the ring. I took it the same way as Danny did, that to be the man did not necessarily mean you had to be a male competitor, because it is wrestling and it is all about the best wrestler. So I had a couple women, of course. Su Yung is always in the best conversation as far as wrestlers for me in the world. Hudson Envy and Mephisto, if those two are healthy and clear for action, would take on and beat down any man and become the man if at all possible. We just saw him at Scenic City, and I think that, again, this is somebody who fits perfectly into the AWE demographic and flow of things. Nick Cage would kill it, pun intended, in an AWE ring. So, Cody, of course, would be great. He's Atlanta, home, raised, bred, and what have you. What better way or what better person to represent the city and in a tournament as such? That would be awesome if at all a possibility. But, you know, hey, so that's like, I got about 11. But again, you mentioned David Starr, of course. There's so many people out there, so many wrestlers not under contract on the independents that we have all these names, but there are so much talent that even, you know, even someone who might not be as familiar to us fans could come in and just really go on a tangent. And, you know, this tournament it's about wins, and wins are important, and wins mean skills. So there's a lot of skilled competitors out there in the world and need someplace to showcase the talent. And this is definitely the place. Atlanta is definitely a place you want to come to showcase your talent. And this tournament, I think, is going to do a lot of that.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. Anytime that we can have an opportunity to see talent that you don't normally see. And, okay, so being more realistic, yeah, I think we'll definitely see a lot of the AW mainstays as well. But it'll be fun nonetheless to see just 16 competitors participating in this tournament. To Be the Man starts in January, will end at some point. I am sure that we will get more details in the next few months. It's plenty of time for them to give us all the information. In the meantime, the season pass for season 5 of for AWE are still on sale. $200. You get to go to all shows of season 5, excluding the Game Expo shows. And of course, that will come with perks that could include anything like, you know, drinks, merch, and, you know, special meet and greets and different perks like that. So definitely something that is really worth it. For just $200, you get to see at least 10 shows, I believe, because based on the number of shows that AWE has put on in the past, you're definitely going to get your money's worth with all the different goodies that they could add per show. So definitely tickets still available. Season starts September 30th, so buy your ticket before then. More information, you can go to the Twitter ATL Wrestling ENT or Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment on the Facebook to get more information and the links. But now we want to take a moment and welcome to the show none other than the CEO of Action Wrestling, my good friend, and of course you could still call you a member of the network, Matt the Mouth, Matt Griffin. How are you doing today, brother?
I'm great. Just 48 hours away from a show. So now that it's the third one, I'm getting the hang of how this is supposed to go.
2 hours from now, the show will almost be over. And, you know, we can all be happy that, you know, hopefully you won't be taking any bumps this time.
I hope not. My bump last time was not planned, but when Billy Buck super kicks you in the face with the buckshot, you're probably going to be going down.
So, man, so this is the third show that you're putting here in Tyrone, Georgia. Of course, people will be able to check it out when available on Powerbomb TV. But tell me, Matt, you're now coming to your third show. How excited are you? Has it met your expectations of how the shows would be?
It's actually exceeded my expectations. To be perfectly honest, and this is going to sound definitely egotistical, and it should, but I knew that I could do this. I knew that I could run shows well because I've had a good training. I had good training in the business. I saw how promotions like Maryland Championship Wrestling, IPWA, in Virginia. I saw a lot of independent promotions in the late 90s, how they ran. I was able to see a lot of the business end of shows. I have been working with a lot of different promotions like the Scenic City Invitational, Anarchy Wrestling, and I've helped produce some of them. So I kind of understood the way a show should flow. So honestly, I felt like I would do really well. But the way the promotion's gone, were received, is far better than I could have hoped for and did hope for. So I'm hopeful everything leads into a great third show.
So tell us about this third show, Matt. What is some of the names? Tell us about some of the matchups we should be looking forward to and what people should definitely come to see and why they should come to see it.
Well, the promotion is called Action Wrestling, and I call it that because that's exactly what type of wrestling it promotes. It's there's not a lot of downtime. It is Southern wrestling in that it's got strong heels and baby faces, but it's definitely not Southern wrestling, and it's not that the Memphis just turn and yell at the crowd type of wrestling. It's very action-oriented show. I've gotten a lot of compliments about how speedy the shows went. Just over 2 hours for the first show, about 2 hours and 15 minutes for the second show. That's because of our producer, Clint Stevens. And honestly, it also helps because I've got great production in you, Patrick Alvarez, because you are on top of it. So I don't have to question you during a show. I know that you're going to keep things moving along, and that's a big asset. But the show I'm looking forward to on top, we've got Austin Theory, who, of course, is lighting the world on fire in Evolve and other independent promotions. He's going to be facing AC Mack, and they are both graduates of AR Fox's WWA 4 school in Atlanta. I'm also very much looking forward to Kane Justice and Dom Guarini. They got to wrestle each other twice in CWF Mid-Atlantic. And if you look at those matches on YouTube, they are fantastically received matches. And both guys actually asked individually for the match. They both wanted to wrestle each other again. Dom Guarini was on my first show against Gunnar Miller. And Kane Justice wrestled Fred Yehi on my on the first show, and Anthony Henry on the second action show. I think those are going to be two fantastic matches. I'm also really excited because going into our second show, we had Joey Lynch, who had just appeared on 205 Live, so on WWE programming. And coming into this show, we have his brother, Matt Lynch, who is just fresh off being featured on SmackDown. So that speaks a lot to the type of talent I try to bring in. They're guys who are very obviously on WWE's radar, which tells me I'm doing some things right. And I know there's other guys that are on our show that are on the radar of some of the bigger promotions and some of the major promotions out there, which is fantastic. And that's one of the things I try to offer guys coming in. I do run mostly benefit shows. The show on August 17th is going to benefit Armed Forces Mission. And the mission is to work to prevent military veteran suicide. So I can't pay as much as other promotions can, but what I can do is give them a fantastic crowd, give them matches that they're interested in, and give them an opportunity to look as good as possible for those for those other chances with bigger promotions. I mean, we had AJ Gray, who was supposed to be on this show, and he messaged me last week and said, "I've got a problem." He's like, "Well, they just asked me to go to Mexico." And I'm like, "That's not a problem. Go to Mexico. You can just come in on the next show." And you've got guys who are going on foreign tours. Fred Yehi is going to Europe very, very soon. When you have wrestlers like that, I mean, it just creates a great environment, and you know you have professionals, and you could probably book a show like this just by drawing names out of a hat or throwing darts at a dartboard, and the end result would end up being some fun, unique matches.
And that's something really that you've that I think that people have said about Action Wrestling is the different type of matches. It's kind of like not everything you see in every other promotion here in Georgia, and the fact that you run in an area that really doesn't have much wrestling, so it's not like overexposing, and there are fans that live nearby that are happy they don't have to drive 20-30 minutes to go see a show. So it's really, and the fact that you do it for as a benefit, and like all three of us have been to shows, and they're really fun, and man, the fans are super excited from beginning to end, you know, and that's something that you can't control. No matter how much great stories or great wrestling you put out, you can never control the fan excitement. And the fans at Action are excited from bell to bell, and not only that, not only the adults but the children are all into the show. And you must be stoked that your community has embraced Action Wrestling and really, welcomed you in with open arms.
I'm very excited about that. It's there's lots of wrestling promotions who try to run town community centers and are unable to because wrestling has a bad rap. Thankfully, I've had a great time with my town. I am running at one of the town buildings, and the town has literally welcomed me. The rec department tells the mayor and the town council about the wrestling shows coming up. It's on the rec department's calendar. It's essentially like it's one of the town rec department's events, which is fantastic. And you can't control the crowd. I tried, it's funny you mentioned that, Patrick, because I tried my own crowd control right before our first show. I had the first person come out be AC Mack. And he's a guy who can talk, because I didn't know what it would be like, at 7:30 on April 27th. I didn't know if people were going to be interested in it or not. You worry about a dead crowd. And so I put the mic in AC Mack's hand. I had him wrestling Joey Lynch, and it's a match that had never happened before. Joey was interested in it because it's somebody he hadn't worked with, and AC definitely wanted the match. So they went out there and it was the perfect match to start off Action with. It was 10 minutes of literal action, and AC got the crowd whipped up, and they stayed up for 2 hours. So you never know. And the fact that people react the way they do, I'm really happy that I do have lots of kids. I have a neighbor who, I just dropped off 9 tickets to him today. Parents are bringing a ton of kids. And one of my 12-year-old neighbor wants to be called the hype man for Action Wrestling at the show. And I'm like, go for it. get everyone interested. You know, that's the biggest compliment you can have is somebody who, you know, it's one thing if somebody is already a big wrestling fan and they want to come back. It's a totally different thing when somebody's never seen a wrestling show before. They aren't even a wrestling fan. They don't watch it on TV, but they came to your show and they want to come back. I mean, that's phenomenal. I'd love to be in an area with a ton of independent wrestling fans where I could just kind of put out a few tweets and it's like, hey, we draw 500, you know. Unfortunately, that's not the case where I'm at in the state. There are some independent promotions in Georgia that do draw really well, and draw their usual draw is, you know, 250 on up. And that's fantastic. That's where I kind of hope to be someday. It's funny because I had so many people tell me that for the show's super lit. And it's funny because when I watched it, I was like disappointed because I was like, oh, you know, as we live streamed on Powerbomb TV. And obviously we had to have the announcers be able to be heard. So it was like the crowd noise was turned down. I thought the crowd was actually quite muted, but people still thought the crowd was really into it and reacting. So that just tells me we probably have one of the hottest crowds in the state of Georgia or in pro wrestling in general. And that's also by design, because I try to balance my shows for that. There is an actual art to putting shows together and how they flow. And that's basically like directing. You're trying to, you know, do peaks and valleys, with a show. You know, you don't just go ahead and book 7 matches and then write them all down. And the 2 biggest names are on top and the second two biggest names are in the semi main and you have an intermittent, you know, you want to look at everything with a great amount of detail.
So with that, we're like you said, we're less than 2 days away. Show number 3. I know you've already got plans for show number 4 in October and on and on. So with all that said, not only that, but talk about embracing the community and something that your community, the City of Tehran already has made public is that you will be part of their annual Founders Festival that they have every year in October. So the fact that they've asked you to bring action wrestling to that again must be, you know, again, it speaks volumes of not only the fans in the community, but like you said before, the City of Tehran embracing action wrestling. Because your shows are benefit shows, I think that also plays a part, you know, that you're also, in a way, giving back to your community because you do try to work with organizations that are local to Tyrone so as to kind of give back. I will, Matt. Thanks for joining us this week to talk about action wrestling. We definitely look forward to seeing the show, some of us live, but most everybody, check it out on Powerbomb TV. As now it'll be 3 shows. They have another one coming up October, and more throughout. So make sure that you are keeping up with Action Wrestling at WrestleAction1 on the Twitter and Action Wrestling on Facebook. Now, guys, let's go ahead and talk about, you know, some sad news in the world of pro wrestling. And let's first off kick off with the loss of Jim D'Angelo Neihardt. As he passed away. He apparently fell and passed shortly after. Jim D'Angelo Neihardt, probably, in my opinion, one of the more underrated members of the Hart Foundation, if not the most underrated member of the Hart Foundation, definitely. Maybe the least popular one, or the one that, you know, would be more lost in the back there with the Hart Foundation. But guys, your thoughts before I get on a tangent about Jim D'Angelo Neihardt.
Well, I mean, I do think Jim was, you know, the, I don't want to say the forgotten member, but he's definitely not the member that people think of first when they think of the Hart Foundation. I think that's because he didn't have the single success. He was, you know, his biggest success moments in wrestling were with tag team or with the unit or kind of, you know, being the kind of corner man muscle for the Hart Foundation as, you know, as the group went later on. But I mean, he definitely was big and powerful and helped make that team of he and Brett so dynamic because such the contrast, you know, he was a bigger guy. He could move very quickly for a bigger guy, for a very strong guy. You know, he had his own kind of unique charisma where Brett was a little bit more devoid of charisma, and that became, you know, part of Brett's gimmick was being devoid of charisma. But then once the Hart Foundation expanded and you had Bulldog and you had Owen, you had some other, you know, more exuberant personalities. And of course the addition of Pillman as well into the Hart Foundation, you know, I mean, just huge personalities. So they just kind of overshadowed Jim and he was kind of relic, you know, used mostly as the strong arm, kind of the muscle behind them, and as opposed to being the singles guy. But I think he definitely did, you know, I mean, the Hart Foundation is definitely one of those teams that so many of us grew up watching, and those that was, you know, I do believe I read somewhere that Jim and Brett are like the only team in WWF history or whatever to win, to have not the only one, but they're one of very few teams to have multiple 200-plus day championship reigns as a team. Because there are a lot of people who've had long title reigns, but like to have multiples with the same partner is the thing there, because partners change so much. But for he and Brett to have, you know, at least two 200-plus day title reigns, you know, definitely. I mean, and it was just one of the reasons that they would, that they get, that they have their place in history. But I, you know, he was one of those guys also who did a lot of mentoring of younger guys, and, you know, the Hart family lives on in his mentoring of TJ Wilson, you know, Tyson Kidd, who's now a road agent for WWE. So Jim's knowledge is still being passed down in that way, as well as Natalya still being a regular roster member. You know, coming from the era of the Divas, working through now into the Divas Revolution and Evolution and all this. So his legacy will live on through his direct teachings as well as the indirect teachings, and just, you know, as being one of the all-time great tag team wrestlers, even though he was a very strong and powerful singles wrestler in his own right. But it was a sad loss, you know. I mean, I think because it was kind of an accident, it's not as though we had heard, you know, of him battling long-time illness. So when I kind of first saw that, I was like, really? Well, oh my goodness, like, what happened? You know, that was kind of my first reaction. But it, just a sad loss for the wrestling world. You know, but his memory, you know, definitely lives on and will continue to do so.
It's definitely sad. More so because it's unexpected. You have, unfortunately or unfortunately, how you look at it, generations who are not so familiar with his body of work. They know just, you know, in all these great tag teams, there is just that one superstar in the forefront. But in order to make that superstar, there definitely has to be somebody who's solid, who's dependable, who's able to make them shine even brighter as a partner. And that's one of the things that Anvil was able to do. He was able to play that second fiddle without losing who he was in the process. And one of the things that we all got in the process was his legacy. That is in Natalya, not just because she is his blood, but because she goes and she, I think from the very start of her career, emulated her father, paid homage to, you know, not just her uncle, but her father was a huge part of what made her uncle the superstar that he is or was today, is that's is, was, and ever will be, or whatever. But it's sad when a parent is lost. And I think we live in such a reality world where people see Natty and all of her social media. She was very close with her family, her father especially. And to have that loss come out of, you know, out of nowhere is a huge shock. And I think wrestling as a whole, we all feel it when we lose not just anybody who we consider a hero or anything to that effect, but just when somebody goes on to that big ring in the sky, it's one of those things where if you don't know who they are, or you have friends and you can sit them down and go, hey, watch this, and kind of explain the beauty of what they did in the ring, what they brought to the entertainment and the business portion of what we consider a passion. And so, you know, it is with heavy heart that we sit back now and, you know, we fire up the network or the YouTube or whatever and kind of go back and watch what this man brought to us and revel in the skill that he had and what he's passed on to this next generation.
Yeah, I know you guys like hit it all in the head, right? Exactly what I was thinking. This man was just an invaluable member of the Hart Foundation, the Hart family. And I do definitely believe that his legacy will live on with Natalia as she continues to thrive in her career. And, you know, it's the Anvil, yeah, he was never as successful. But, you know, like to Danny's point, you know, he did help make the cookie cutter Bret Hart into a, you know, get the spot. First of all, I mean, we knew he'd eventually get a chance to make it big. But, you know, at his size, you know, he needed somebody like the Anvil to look like a believable evil tag team. And, man, they were great for many years together. Then you look over, and after that was done, and then, you know, Bret, of course, got elevated. Lost in the Shuffle was the Anvil, but then out came Owen and another young cookie cutter looking like kid who was looking to break out, and the new Hart Foundation was born. And then this Owen was elevated, you know, Jim was always in the background, but hey, when they brought back the Hart Foundation, you know, when Bret, Owen, and the British Bulldog reunited on that Monday Night Raw many years ago, and they decided to put back the band, we knew that they needed to bring the Anvil, Neidhart, in order to, you know, truly make this the Hart Foundation. And, you know, I'll always remember the jackets with their names in the back, you know, the t-shirts with all their first names. It'll always be, I'm just glad that they were able to at least have that, you know, and all, you know, when they were the Calgary Stampede pay-per-view and they were like the heroes to Canada. It may not have been like a, you know, necessarily great career per se, as some based on the level that he may have reached in comparison to the other members of the Hart family. But I don't know about you guys, Jim Neidhart is a Hall of Famer in my book, and he should be inducted into the Hall of Fame in the next few years. I'm sure they were holding off for the Hart Foundation as a group, the five of them, but I think in some way they need to put him in, because you just, how long are you going to wait? He definitely deserves to be there on his own, even, I think, in his own right.
So they didn't put Bret's in there as a solo star, but he's not in there as the tag team, the Hart Foundation, with Anvil and Jimmy. Is that what you're saying?
Jim is not there. I was thinking they were probably holding to put the collective group of five, which probably would never happen.
I would think that this year especially, if not as part of it, they may just put him in as a solo. And then, you know, throughout his career, highlight the different things he did with the people, with the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, so a big loss in pro wrestling, but another loss And this one's more mainstream, but she was part of WrestleMania many, many years ago. Aretha Franklin passed away.
She was part of two WrestleManias.
So, you know, hey, that itself, a lot, you know, should give her a, you know, a ballad to the celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame.
I mean, she sang it at WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 23. I mean, there's not, I think that the number of people who made appearances at WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 23 is probably kind of limited.
Pretty short list there. But Aretha Franklin, well, outside of pro wrestling, you know, what can one say about one of the biggest and greatest voices of many generations?
Absolutely. I mean, and I always kind of hold, you know, I mean, she was one of my favorite movies, especially my favorite 1980s movies, The Blues Brothers.
And I was so about to mention that one.
Very, very big scene, you know, there where she sings there in the diner. You know, but I mean, there's so much more throughout her music, and as well as kind of being a bit of, you know, some with this, you know, a little bit in civil rights and a little bit of political activism, like here and there, you know, but not just for women, not just for women of color, but also, you know, women of different sizes. You know, she never, you know, she was always kind of a more of a curvy lady. She didn't really fit the traditional mold of what a pop singer would be, but, you know, yet again, it's because of her amazing talent and charisma and her voice that she was able to overcome so many things that, you know, seemingly in the entertainment industry at the time could be seen as things that were holding against her. So yes, just another great cultural loss. You know, of course, her contributions to wrestling, but of course her contributions to music and to just the American popular culture. Yeah, I mean, truly a household name, if there ever was one.
That was a voice. That was a spirit, a body that will never ever be reached or achieved again. Just from the life that she led until her, there's just so much that she accomplished that no woman of color ever had or will. The fact that she sang opera at the Met in her latter years, the fact that her voice is so distinct that every good singer, whether it be pop, rock, or any genre, country, lists her as an influence, because that woman was just amazing. So yeah, there is, of course, a tie with wrestling, but the tie is the music. It is the spirit of the music, is the powerful delivery, and that just once in a lifetime voice that spans so many generations that will truly, truly be missed by fans and non-fans alike. Every influence from here and beyond will have a part of her in it, but no one will ever be able to duplicate Aretha Franklin.
With that, two very sad losses this week, and not just in pro wrestling, but in the whole world. But we mourn with those who are currently suffering. Our condolences to all family, friends, and loved ones of Jim Neidhart and Aretha Franklin. But now we have this weekend to look forward to. And we have not one, but two major events happening in Brooklyn, New York, starting this Saturday night, 8 p.m. on the WWE Network. For only $9.99, NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. Guys, are you hyped or are you hyped?
Dude, I'm so hyped for Brooklyn. I was just rewatching this week's NXT. Just so hyped for the title matches. You know, I mean, I could, I, I mean, there's a couple matches, you know, of the, you know, six matches there'll be, there was like one or two that I was like, eh, whatever. But title matches, especially, the title matches are technically rubber matches. All three of them are. Well, not, you know, it's not, okay. The three that are really, that really count, there's the one title that kind of nobody cares about because it hasn't been established yet. But the women's championship is a rubber match. Finals in the Mae Young Classic. Kyrie challenged Shayna before Shayna became champion. And they each have one. And so now they're looking to settle the score. Same with the tag team championships. They bounce those belts back and forth. The Undisputed Era and Mustache Mountain. So this will be their third encounter. And then we have the third encounter between Ciampa and Gargano. But they're matches we've seen before, but they've done enough to keep us interested in wanting to see these matches again, which is a big thing because, you know, part of it is facing, and we, you know, that, you know, you do a first ever and you have people fight a bunch of times in 2 months, then people get sick of seeing them fight. But if you kind of stretch it out, you know, then you can still make it, interesting and exciting each time they go out there and fight. So I'm very, very excited for Brooklyn. I know it's always a big show. The crowd's always crazy. And it's, yeah, and it's, I'm always hyped for the takeovers. They always deliver.
The takeovers deliver like more so than most, if not all of the pay-per-views. So it almost doesn't matter. You could sit somebody down who's never seen a takeover and watch their eyes light up and watch the excitement that will come from watching these matches and just watching each and every person just bring their ultimate game because the crowd is there, the action is there. There is almost nothing better than a takeover in Brooklyn than almost nothing better. So wrestling wise, it is, this is one of, you know, what SummerSlam is supposed to be, the second biggest pay-per-view after WrestleMania. I'm not excited about SummerSlam, but the takeover is what I'm most looking forward to. And that, unfortunately, you know, brings away from the main pay-per-view. So hopefully the main pay-per-view doesn't disappoint, but I'm not worried about takeover disappointing. I know that it will be awesome.
All right, well, let's get down to it. Let's take a look at the card and make our predictions in no particular order. In a singles match, EC3 versus the Velveteen Dream, which I think this one will be one more for the 1% of NXT and EC3 taking the W here. Then, for the NXT Tag Team Championships, the Undisputed Era's Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong will defend the championships against Mustache Mountain, Tyler Bate, and Trent Seven. I will go with the champions here, and I think they will retain the championships at TakeOver Brooklyn 4. Then for the North American Championship, Adam Cole will be defending versus Ricochet. And who's going to leave with the North American Championship? Well, in my opinion, the one and only will be the new North American Champion, as Ricochet will uncrown Adam Cole. And for the Women's Championship, Shayna Baszler will defend her championship at Kairi Sane. As you alluded, Danny, a rematch from the Mae Young Classic. And I believe here we may just see we will see Shayna Baszler retain the championship and get the best of Sane. And in a last man standing match for the NXT Championship, the feud that will never go away, and, you know, probably one of the hottest feuds in in recent years in the WWE. Tommaso Ciampa will defend his championship against Johnny Wrestling. And as this is supposed to be a triple threat match with former champion Aleister Black until he got injured and had to be taken out of the match. So here we go. Ciampa, Gargano, 1-on-1. Who's going to win? Well, I believe that this is going to be the moment everybody has been waiting for, as Johnny Wrestling will become Mr. NXT, as he will win the championship and finally get the revenge against his former best friend.
Velveteen Dream and EC3 is the bathroom break match. So if they put that on first, then that means I don't have to watch the show till later. If they put it on somewhere in the middle, then that gives me the bathroom break. Just not really a fan of either guy. I don't really like Velveteen. He just doesn't do anything to impress me or excite me. And EC3 came in with a lot of hype, but I haven't seen anything from him that, you know, that interests me. I could care less, especially the stupid vignettes, you know, at the pool and all that crap they had. I don't care. This isn't why I watch NXT. I wanted to see this kind of stuff, I'd watch Raw every week. Okay. You know, skip that match. I don't care who wins. Just hope it's short. Adam Cole, I hope, retains against Ricochet because I don't like Ricochet. And the Adam Cole character especially is better as a champion. Though you, of course, have to have him lose the championship eventually. But I think Adam Cole in general as a character, you know, in ROH as well, was much better as a champion. So I hope he retains that. The Undisputed Era, although yet again, it is not the tag team combination that I would like. We still don't know when Bobby will be back and able to start competing on the regular. I would definitely like to see, you know, the Red Dragon duo as well as a possible combination of Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish get a good run together. I think those could both be interesting, but we'll go ahead and say the Undisputed Era retains because, I don't think we need to have the first ever two-time father-son tag team championship duo. You know, I mean, they already held the belts once. It was a sweet moment. You know, a wrestler and his dad sharing the belts together. I don't think they need to win it twice. Kairi Sane and Shane, I think it's going to be really exciting because it is, you know, a return match, but then they also had a return singles match where Shayna actually gave Kairi Sane her first singles loss, one-on-one singles loss in WWE. You know, so that's where the thing says, you know, Shayna says, I keep getting better and better and better. I could see this one going either way. I could see it going either way. I could see Shayna retaining and then, you know, going to a showdown. Her next big showdown would, of course, be with whomever wins the Mae Young Classic this year. Would be possibly her next big program. So we'll see where that goes. But we come to Ciampa and Gargano, and it was supposed to be a three-way with Aleister Black, who we've seen more footage about. Aleister Black supposedly being attacked in the parking lot, you know, with where they showed us all this thing. And they're like, look, there were like 30 different NXT wrestlers somehow outside of the building at this time. Who could it have been? Why was nobody looking this hard when Hideo Itami got attacked? Okay. Hideo Itami got attacked in that parking lot 2 years ago in broad daylight. And they didn't even really seem to investigate. Nobody cared. Okay. We get it. You know, Aleister Black, white. He's good looking. Okay. But Hideo Itami's a monster. If you guys are watching 205 Live, he's a flipping monster. And it's amazing. The Hideo Itami on 205 Live is the Hideo Itami that we needed all along in WWE. So a little disappointed in, you know, WWE and their you know, Asian exclusions when it comes to investigations of that. I mean, hey, it could have been Hideo Itami, you know, come to attack Aleister Black because he was pissed that nobody really looked into his when he got attacked there. You know?
It's possible. It is possible.
Show him respect, even if he has to beat you up in the dark and take you out of a takeover match. So, as far as the actual match itself goes, I still don't think that we're done with the Gargano and Ciampa, because I think they already started kind of teasing something about where this goes and what this means. Like, basically, Johnny is starting to have to become what he hates in order to defeat he's having to become the evil in order to defeat the evil, basically. You know, he's become a changed person, and he's just got this darker edge. And either if something happens in the match where he realizes that and he lightens up and he wins it his way, then yes, that's the finale. But if he like somehow wins and then realizes like, oh no, dude, like it becoming this turns me into this person and I have to, you know, yeah. If they do the story and tell it right, where, you know, somewhere in the match, Johnny stops and starts to realize like, you know, he's trying to stop himself from becoming the evil that he's trying to defeat, then I think we could see Johnny as champion. But then it comes down to, you have to do something, you have to split him up after that. You know, if you're going to have Johnny get the big win and get the championship, you have to split him up, which means you got to get Ciampa out of there. You got to get Ciampa on the main roster. Because it's, yeah, they're in theory, this isn't going to be something that either of these guys is just going to let go as long as the other guys in the same sharing the same locker room on a weekly basis with them. So if they want to keep it going, Ciampa needs to win. If they want it to be done, then Johnny needs to win, and Ciampa needs to make his way towards Raw or SmackDown or 205 Live, depending on
depending on his weight.
Yeah, depending on if he can make the weight cut on a consistent basis. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm just going to roll through. I love EC3. EC3 for the win. I am part of the 1%. So, you know, hey. Mustache Mountain, I'm kind of tired of them. So, Undisputed Era. Adam Cole, baby. Ciampa wins by beating Gargano with his wife. I don't know. He's just going to pick her up and use her as a weapon. I know it's not that kind of match, but he's going to do something dastardly. He doesn't have a mustache. He can twirl, but it'll be Dick Dastardly style winning. And then we got Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler. Kairi Sane wins. Shayna needs to go up to the main roster and hang out with her girl Ronda. And they need to start the whole four horsewomen gimmick. So Shayna loses.
All right. Well, that is NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. And it's going to be a hot one. 5 matches. Easy to watch. It's a great formula for NXT and these big shows. But then we got to take a look at the night after. And that brings us to the biggest wrestling show of the summer, as SummerSlam comes into Brooklyn. And in no particular order, first in your pre-show, that B team of Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel will defend the WWE Raw Tag Team titles versus The Revival. And Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega will be teaming up in a mixed tag team match against Rusev and Lana on Rusev Day of all days.
The last Rusev Day.
Then on your main card, Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jeff Hardy for the United States title. Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin in a singles match. Daniel Bryan versus The Miz in a singles match. Cedric Alexander versus Drew Gulak for the Cruiserweight Championship. And actually, if I believe correctly, that's also going to be on the kickoff show as well. Carmella will defend her SmackDown Women's title versus Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair in a triple threat match. Dolph Ziggler will defend his Intercontinental title against Seth Rollins. Drew McIntyre in Ziggler's corner. Dean Ambrose will be backing up Rollins. And Braun Strowman will be wrestling Kevin Owens in a singles match for the Money in the Bank contract. So if Strowman loses by any means, then he will lose the contract to Owens. The Bludgeon Brothers will be defending the SmackDown Live Tag Team titles against The New Day, a combination of Big E, Kofi, and Xavier. The Goddess of the WWE will be defending her championship against Rowdy Ronda Rousey in a one-on-one match. Then AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship. Yes, fans, start salivating for that one. And in what's likely to be your main event of the evening, Brock Lesnar defends the Universal Championship versus Roman Reigns. Now, I don't know if me saying that gives you a case of the deja vu, but I feel like I've said that before. So, guys, where do you stand here? What are your predictions on this 13-match card?
Long. You know, you include the kickoff show, which should feature, I know, is going to feature the Cruiserweight Championship match and possibly one of the tag team matches. It's a long show, and there's still things that irk me about it. Okay, the first thing is that Drew McIntyre is still not wrestling on the main show card. Okay, he's still just in the corner of Ziggler. He's you know, amazing talent, and yet this is now the second show in a row that he's just the corner man. He is not even in a singles match. It's not even a tag match. Just very, very upsetting to me. You know, I'm happy that Andrade will bring about the C-Apocalypse and end Rusev Day once and for all. I mean, Miz and Bryan, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, this is the one feud that has taken Daniel and Miz throughout their entire WWE careers. The first feud that Daniel ever had in the WWE when he first came, and Miz was his pro on the season of NXT, and then Daniel would go on to defeat Miz for the United States Championship. So it's the first feud, and it continues, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm still mad that they decided to add Charlotte to the SmackDown Women's match. You know, this is supposed to be Becky's time. Get Charlotte off my TV. And your real main event for the evening is going to be the barn burner, and that's AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe. That is the main event. It is for the WWE Championship. This is a WWE show. You know, two of the greatest competitors of this, easily this century. And you know, you would think at this stage in 2018. These men are past their prime, but that is nowhere near the case, as they are still at the top of their game, competing at the highest level. So excited for this match. As soon as they started kind of teasing this, I was like, oh, yes, do it. And we're going to see it. We're going to see it at SummerSlam. in your main event for the WWE Championship, AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe. They're going Broadway, baby. 60-minute time on the draw. They're going to kill each other for 60 minutes.
Okay, well, this is, like, I know, again, I said it already, that this is supposed to be, like, the biggest pay-per-view after WrestleMania, so it kind of sort of makes sense that it's, like, 850 matches on the card. And I think the only thing I'm really just kind of super upset, not upset, but looking forward to seeing is not just the cancellation of Rusev Day, but let's go ahead and, you know, let it be known that Lana Day will also be, you know, scratched, clawed, removed from our calendars. So we have that to look forward to. Perhaps the fake accent will also leave. I doubt it, but, you know, hey, whatever. So, yeah.
Goes, Mike. Because there was a time when she didn't use the accent, when she was like, you know, party MILF with Dolph Ziggler, where she, you know, I mean, that was a good time. She didn't have the accent for like 4 months, and then she came back and the accent was back. You're like, what? It just comes and goes. You can turn it on and off.
I mean, I'm not knocking it, but I just don't understand it. Okay, so I know I'm all out of order there, but let's go ahead. Yeah, we talked craziness. I mean, the B team, the Revival. Is that even really a match for this pay-per-view?
Like, I'm curious as to who the fans are supposed to cheer for. I thought those are both kind of bad guy teams, right?
Well, no, the B team is super face. I mean, yeah. They've got this irritating theme song. It's a match that I don't care about. So B team retains. The Revival is not going to get their due. Like I said, Cian Almas and Zelina Vega for the win. Miz versus Bryan. Bryan doesn't need to win. The Miz wins. Bryan is just so over. It does not matter if he loses this match. It's not like he's going to retire because he lost. And the Miz just needs that further justification of being the ultimate heel. So Miz for the win. Corbin and Balor. I like Balor, of course. Who doesn't, right? Corbin, I don't care about Corporal or whatever his name is at this point.
A constable, not Corporal.
It doesn't matter what his name is. I'm not even trying to be like The Rock, but really, it doesn't matter what his name is. He sucks in this version of himself, so I don't care. So yeah, Corbin for the win, just because, again, Balor is one of those wrestlers who does not need the actual victory. Hardy versus Nakamura. Jeff Hardy, I would love to see Jeff win just to get his revenge for him getting his balls literally busted, but Nakamura picks up this win. Cedric versus Drew Gulak. Today's Cedric Alexander's birthday, this Thursday, today, the 16th. He loses come Sunday. Happy birthday. Carmella versus Becky versus Charlotte. Carmella retains for some unknown reason to me.
Because they want to break up Becky and Charlotte and have them be a feud. So
they've been there, done that. I mean,
yeah, but they're going to revisit it, apparently. Why else would you add Charlotte in the match?
I don't know who's supposed to have this short term of memory. We've seen this already. At least throw another girl in the mix someplace. So hopefully there is some interference that Carmella wins over Becky and Charlotte. Maybe we see our girl who's the current NXT champion come up and, you know, make her will impose on those two. Uncle Vince, get on that. Dolph is going to win. Dean Ambrose is back looking all jacked and hot as all hell. But that matters not because Dolph is a show off. I am thinking that KO wins this damn Money in the Bank just because of all the poop, literally, he's been through. And because it would not be unheard of for the WWE to take a Money in the Bank contract off of someone. I don't think Braun has done anything wrong. I just think that he's done such right things that they're scared to put him in as a next champion. They're not ready to do that yet. So KO can take the Money in the Bank briefcase and cash it in to lose, and it'll be just one of those things. Bludgeon Brothers killed the New Day. I'm hoping that either Kofi or Xavier is actually sacrificed to whatever dark gods the Bludgeon Brothers pray to. Perhaps Sister Abigail can come and take their spirit and turn them into singles competitors. AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe. This is the match that we've seen before in their youth, and now they're older, more wiser, more mature, and Joe's going to kill AJ. Alexa versus Ronda. Alexa wins. I'm sorry. I apologize. Ronda Rousey is your winner via disqualification. Alexa retains. And Brock versus Roman. Who cares? I think we see a title change because as much as Vince would love to, his ego will not let him let Brock Lesnar skip out to the the MMA world with a piece of hardware that Vinnie Mac owns.
All righty. Well, here's what I got. Almas and Vega will be victorious, as will the Revival, the new tag team champions. Daniel Bryan will beat The Miz. Corbin will lose to Balor because, you know, Balor Club forever. Shinsuke Nakamura will retain the U.S. Championship. Cedric Alexander will retain the Cruiserweight Championship. Charlotte Flair will win the SmackDown Women's Championship. Seth Rollins will win the Intercontinental Championship. Braun Strowman will beat Kevin Owens all the way back to Canada. The Bludgeon Brothers will defeat the New Day to retain the tag team titles. JJ Styles will defeat Samoa Joe to continue on his quest to becoming the longest reigning WWE champion. Ronda Rousey will defeat Alexa Bliss by some shenanigans, I assume, that it will allow Alexa to retain her championship. Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. My only prediction of that match is Roman Reigns will not walk out of Brooklyn with the Universal Championship. Now, how that will happen, I don't know. But we all will have to stay tuned and watch this Sunday at a 7 p.m. start time for the main show. I believe the kickoff starts at 5 p.m. Eastern time. So, you know, we can be watching pro wrestling until midnight or whatever not. So, a long weekend of wrestling. A lot happened. NXT TakeOver, Brooklyn 4, SummerSlam, the biggest show of the summer. All on the WWE Network for only $9.99. Of course, we'll be talking about that and much more next week on our next episode here of the Fans of Wrestling Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, tune in, subscribe, you know, give us a rating, 5 stars. You know, we promise no more than 5 stars, all right? But anything else, comment on it. Follow us on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F. in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.